It is good to see this interest in spiritual things this evening. God bless you for that. Tonight's lesson deals with a little bit of history and man's theories and God's Word. So let's consider these things. About the 1840s, something was uncovered in the deserts of the United States which astounded individuals. Bones that were considered the bones of giant humans. I believe one was a femur, and it was just a huge thing. And someone immediately said, "We have found the giants of Genesis chapter 6, verse 4 fame." But further digging, and there was a lot of that going on, a lot of investigation into the various strata of the earth, for naturalist purposes as well as theological purposes, science had gained such tremendous impetus by the mid-19th century that it was obviously a major force for civilization, considered so by that time. Many people who would consider themselves Christians saw science as a very helpful tool in helping find out the mysteries of life and filling in gaps in the scriptures and that sort of thing. But there was a growing atheistic, materialistic view of things that saw in the evidence of the earth an opportunity with a new theory, which was just beginning to make inroads at that time. And of course, we're talking about Darwin's theory of natural selection. And in that context, they were seeing an opportunity to get science away from theological concerns and let it stand solely on naturalist slash atheistic concerns. So, the claim that here were giant men who were found immediately established the theists as those guided not by science but by the Bible. And then they found out that it wasn't a giant femur bone of a human being, but of an animal. And that there were more bones of giant animals being found. And now the theists are beginning to look foolish and beginning to look like they can't really investigate because they've got their Bible in front of their face, so they can't honestly tell what is in front of them. These giant animals came to be called dinosaurs. And they were found ultimately in practically every corner of the world. And there was nothing like them on the face of the earth. And tying it in with the Darwinian theory of natural selection and how that you have to have millions of years of time as natural selection does its work. You've got to have all that time to be able to see the various progression. And evolution was seen from the beginning as a progression. You've got to see the progression of the animal species take hold to what we have today. So the various strata was being seen as millions of years of natural history. Of course, the theists posited the flood and evidence for the flood, but they were quickly becoming discredited. Now, when the idea of giant monstrous animals roaming the earth began to get put out, the immediate response of those who believed the Bible was to say it was all a fraud. These were just made up stories of these guys who didn't believe the Bible. And there are no such things as dinosaurs. And this carried on until into the 20th century. I can remember members of the church saying, in one context or another, that there really are no such things as dinosaurs. There are no such things as these huge monstrous animals that these skeletons seem to indicate. And the more of these skeletons were found, then the more foolish that looked. Until finally, the response of the theistic community, and I'm being speaking in very general terms, but the response, as it was publicized for sure, the response of the theistic community was to say, well, it's all a giant fraud perpetrated by Satan. That the so-called skeletons are satanic evidence which the devil has made and placed in the ground to lead people astray from the scriptures. Well, when they got there, anybody who cared anything about evidence found in the earth totally rejected the theistic mentality. They just had nothing to offer. And then was seen a brand new age of scientific investigation where people now will be guided by true knowledge and not by so-called faith in a God we can't even see. It really didn't do the church any good for people to create ways to try to explain away evidence that was as plain as the nose on their face. Then it was time for the atheist or the materialist to take a step out. And their grand step was, it's obvious that dinosaurs and men never occupied the earth at the same time. That when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, there were no such things as men. In fact, there were no such things as primates. The best you could trace us back to were perhaps little mammalian lemurs that were running around, trying desperately not to get stomped on by the great Tyrannosaurus and Brontosaurus. That was their dogma, and that they have held on to since that time in the 1840s. That's been the big deal. Of course, also, in the fossil record was assumed that there would be all these demonstrations of missing links, all these demonstrations of various links between all the species of animal life and including man on the earth, and that it would all soon be plain and it would all be charted out. And indeed, it has all been charted out. But again, now the materialist has taken the step out contrary to evidence, and has assumed a mythology for which there just really is no evidence in the natural strata of the earth. There's a whole bunch of assumptions, but no solid evidence. But it sounded real good, and it worked real good. The only trouble is it has placed now the paleontologist and other naturalist scientists in some very tough situations, so much so that I got to tell you this. This was in one of the presentations of a religious group not too long ago, where they're talking about this famous paleontologist and the finding of yet another missing link that they're able to place in the family of man, and it just looks so good. But of course there are some problems, and the paleontologist, the mighty thinker that he is going to wrestle with this and come to a conclusion. And his answer is to get this saw, this electric saw, and start digging into the bone. And so he cranks. So the presentation ends with him cranking up his electric saw and it going into the bone that's supposed to be the demonstration of the missing link. Now, did you get that? What is that called? It's called tampering with evidence. It's not being honest with the facts. It doesn't quite fit. Well, we'll see about that. You know, that's what it is. That's what's going on. on that perspective. But here's the thing, going back to the dinosaurs. You can't ignore the evidence. And thankfully, nobody worth their salt who discusses Christian apologetics today tries to go that route, saying, don't worry about the evidence of dinosaurs. It's, you know, it's from Satan. So don't worry about it. Nobody's going there anymore. There's evidence of dinosaurs. It's just there. It's just real. And they found too much of it. And they put too many bones together. Now, it is true that they assumed a great deal on the basis of one or two bones to try to flesh out an entire animal. But that's been a long time ago. Now they have found enough to be able to put, and we've got DNA comparisons that sometimes you can even do with dinosaur bones, where you can mix and match and see how one bone fits with another, and it'd be the same animal. So that's pretty well established, and so the idea of dinosaurs is a real idea. But now here's the thing. Remember that I said the materialists kind of stepped out and said there's never been a time when dinosaurs and men were together. That is proving itself to be more and more problematic. Of course, they cannot afford, according to the theory as it now is, they cannot afford for there to be dinosaurs and men together on the earth. That's just too short a time. They have to have the millions of years. If they don't have millions of years, then they have absolutely no workable mechanism to explain their theory. They have nothing. So the millions of years is a have to. And yet, things come up in investigations, in discoveries, just like the dinosaur bones did. Things come up that demand explanation. And if they don't fit the theory, they're usually laughed off as contrivances, or the expert will shrug and say, well, it's an anomaly, as if that magic word just dispels the contrary evidence and we're not supposed to worry about it, since it's an anomaly, you see. But after you get enough anomalies, you ought to begin to think, well, maybe the theory has a problem. Well, what anomalies are we talking about? Well, here's one. It's been established. It's been around a long time. Some men, even in the church, haven't wanted to have to fool with this because it's been problematic from the beginning. But the more it's investigated, the more this evidence holds up. And the ones that have some explaining to do are the ones who continue to hold to their theory in the face of the evidence. This is a fossilized creek bed. This is a print of a dinosaur. And there's obviously a heavy dinosaur. And then there's also, right behind it, the print of a much lighter dinosaur, as if it may be a different species, maybe a child of the dinosaur that's following mama. And then you've got this, which can be nothing else than a human fossilized footprint inside the dinosaur footprint. This is so clearly demonstrated that when this first came out in the first part of the 20th century, it was laughed at as a hoax. And, of course, the people who found it said, well, we didn't do it. And this is what we found. This is what it is. Different ones would go out there and they say, well, it has to be a hoax. It has to be. So they kept digging, and sure enough, this fossilized creek bed went a ways. And then it ran right into a mountain. And they dug into the mountain and found the creek bed continuing. And guess what else continued right into the mountain? The fossilized footprint. So it could not have been a hoax. That is impossible. Nobody's that smart. Nobody's that good, that powerful. Unless Satan did. Now we won't go there. So then, what was the answer? Well, the answer is, this is what a baby dinosaur's foot looks like. Yeah, sure, of course. In other words, we humans weren't back there, but the baby dinosaurs sure did look like us. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And of course, that got laughed out of school. So all that's left is, all right, it's just an anomaly. It's obviously of a particular species that we just don't know anything about. But the only thing it could be in terms of known quantity, in terms of evidence, is a human footprint. Very, very interesting. Now here's something out of Arizona. And I remember hearing about this when I was young. But this was discovered in the 1920s. And ever so often it makes the news rounds. And they talk about it. This is on a cave drawing with a lot of other drawings. And they're obviously done by Indians. And they're drawing various animals. And they're putting those drawings on the caves. And then there's this thing, which, for if you study dinosaurs, it looks an awful lot like a T-Rex or an Allosaurus. A very simplified drawing, but there's nothing else it could be. That huge tail, standing upright. Doesn't have a big nose. Almost looks a little like a horse's head, and that's interesting, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But that's the drawing. Okay, now why is that so fascinating? Well, because it's not a fake. It's been around. They've done the comparisons. They've compared that, the texture of the paint with the other texture of the other drawings, and it's the same thing. It comes from the same time. Why is this so unique? Well, nobody's supposed to know an animal like that. That's supposed to be out of not just our time. It's supposed to be out of our understanding, out of our imagination. Nobody's going to come up with something like that. So where did it come from? Well, obviously somebody in drawing the animals they're familiar with had something that they wanted to draw that they thought looked like something they're familiar with, which to us looks like a dinosaur. Not only that, but you've got something called the dragon legends that people are beginning to go back and re-look at. There's Discovery Channel has put out a few of these discussions about the dragon legends, and there could there be some sort of connection between the dinosaur discoveries and the dragon legends? And actually, some scientists have said yes. What they've said, though, is that what the ancient men found were the fossils. And therefore, finding the fossils, they assumed that they were looking at what to them were dragons. I don't know if that answers much. It is an idea. It is something to think about, something perhaps to pursue from a theoretical standpoint. But there's just too much of this stuff. Dragon legends are found in China, in Greece, in Scandinavia, and in Britain. And that's just a few of them. And they all look the same. There's the similarity about their appearance. Listen to this. There are some things called mystery animals. The okapi, the gorilla, and the giraffe are all recently discovered species. Did you know that? And when reports of these animals began to come out, you know what the scientific community said? Well, it's myth. It's legend. Of course, there are not any animals really like that. They refused to believe in the giraffe. You know why? Because there was no place to put the giraffe on the evolutionary timeline. There's no way to explain the giraffe. Now, when I was in school, they tried to explain it as the food source kept getting higher and higher. So only those with the longer, only the children of giraffes with the longer necks were able to reach it. But that begins to get silly real quick. There is no evolutionary answer for a giraffe. And yet, the giraffes were discovered. Coelacanth, maybe you've heard of that. Ancient fish died out millions and millions of years ago. So said science. Until they found an example of a living coelacanth, I think in South America. Living coelacanth. Living fossils, now they're called. This isn't the first time that's happened. There's now been a few times when the ancient animals of long ago have been discovered living in some isolated area. You know what that means? That means an animal that isn't supposed to have had anything to do with us is existing at the same time we are. That is very, very interesting. And now, you have rumors, and the rumor has persisted for a little over 100 years. Brontosaurus in the midst of Africa, Lake Edward area. And, of course, Nessie in Loch Ness, which sounds a whole lot like a plesiosaur. Now, here's the interesting thing about Nessie. You know, there was the talk of Nessie long before the dinosaur bones were discovered. Nessie's legend goes back 400 years or longer. Isn't that interesting? We only knew of such things as a plesiosaur in the early 20th century. Something we might want to label Nessie. But Nessie was around long before that. So we've got to ask this question. If dinosaurs were unknown to humanity until the mid-1800s, where did all these descriptions come from of animals much older than the 1800s that sound so close to what could not have been known? In other words, these guys. None of these pictures are supposed to be indicative of anything known before the early 1800s. None of these pictures. And yet you've got the British coat of arms, ancient medieval pictures of dragons. You've got the pottery of the Greeks. You've got the dragon supposed to be disgorging a hero of the Greek mythology. You've got the fighting with a dragon in a Roman carving. You've got the ancient Chinese dragons, been known for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then there's the, you know, good old Vikings. And they're Norse. People want to call them legends. You know, they were really good seamen. And they loved their ships, and they knew how to build their ships, and they took a lot of pride in their ships, and so they carved on the bow of their ship figureheads. And sometimes that figurehead would be a deer. And sometimes it would be a panther. And sometimes it would be a dragon. Now, what's interesting is, we can understand they're carving a deer or a panther on their ship. It's an animal that they discovered in their travels that they're impressed with. Or lion. Where did the dragon come from? Where did that come from? Some guy just doodling about how he wants his ship designed? I think I'll come up with this. Yeah, that looks really good. Somebody said, what's that? Oh, I don't know. It looks cool though, doesn't it? Yeah, let's build ships like that. Who believes that? They're building things that they're familiar with, that they've seen. They're not into mythology. Even their myths they take as real. They're dealing with true power, true strength. True, they want true fear. They don't want their enemies to look at their dragon head on their ship and go, ha! Look at that cartoon. No, they want them to go, ah, it's a dragon ship. They want them to be terrorized as they come down to conquer. That means it's got to be what? It's got to be real. And it was real. Now that's undebatable. You can't get past that. Now the question is, why is it real to them? That's the question. And then you've got these guys. The behemoth of Job 40, 15 through 24, and the Leviathan of Job 41, 1 through 34. I've heard it all my life, my young years, that the behemoth was a hippopotamus and the Leviathan was a crocodile. I'm sorry, but these guys knew what a crocodile was. And Job 41 does not describe a crocodile. It just doesn't. Nor does Job 40 describe a hippopotamus. And here's a thing I like to point out when I go over these things. Mammals, large mammals, have small tails. The bigger the mammal, the shorter the tail. It's only reptiles that the bigger they get, the bigger the tail gets. And this behemoth has a tail like a cedar. And the cedar is the biggest tree that they know of in the Middle East. It's the huge tree. It's the sequoia of their area. This is an animal with a huge tail. Sounds a whole lot like a large reptile. In fact, it sounds a whole lot like a brontosaurus. The Leviathan is spoken of not only in Job 41, but in Psalm 104, 25 and 26, and Isaiah 27, 1, as a serpent. And New King James has it translated a reptile. A huge reptilian serpent. Very similar to what the Norsemen may have found in their travels. Or very similar to the carving on the pottery of the Greeks. Or the picture of the pottery that's put on the pottery. And the carving into the stone of the Romans. Very similar to those things. So either you're going to have to say that the Bible influenced those cultures, and that's where they got the idea. Or you're going to have to say that these are things out of their own experience. More than that, though, you've got to go to the Bible itself and say, where did that come from? Descriptions of animals totally unknown to us. We grasp at the hippopotamus and the crocodile to give it some sort of a name. To give it some sort of an identity. But now that we know about dinosaurs, we know that the behemoth and the Leviathan don't fit anything in our regular experience. They sound much more like dinosaurs. But of course, Job 40 and 41 were written to men who would know of these animals, because this was to impress you to fear God, the creator of these animals. This is God speaking to Job. Why Job needed not to worry so much about his hardships and needed to focus on the Lord. Because the Lord can come up with a creature like a Leviathan. And it was designed to put the fear in him, but also designed to put the hope in him. A God who can do that can do anything. So, you know, here we go. We can look at the theists and their response to the dinosaur, and we can go, how silly, how foolish. You don't treat evidence that way. Well, now we've got enough evidence piled up. We can look at the atheists. We can look at the materialists and go, all right, so when are you guys going to learn? Not to ignore the evidence, but to deal with the plain facts that are right in front of you. As plain as the nose on your face or a figurehead on the bow of a ship. Ultimately, it does come down to this. We're dealing with dueling theories just like it was in the middle of the 1800s, so it still is now. And either evolution is right, the theory of man, or the Bible is right, the Word of God. And if you notice in Genesis 1, 11 and 12, 21, 24 and 25, God makes it clear that every living thing that's created is to reproduce, how? After its own. That one phrase that's found repeatedly in Genesis 1 overthrows Darwinian evolution, because that's just not what evolution says. So, here's the point of the lesson. Will you believe man or God? Will you believe the evidence? Or will you hold to theory in spite of evidence? Loving the truth is important. So also, listen to Romans 3:4. Indeed, let God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written, that you, the Lord, may be justified in your words and may overcome when you are judged. You know, woe to the man who looks at the scriptures and goes, that's not true. That's a dangerous position to be in. And even though he thinks he has facts on his side, the careful man will go, I've got to review these facts. I'm missing something. I need to make sure I'm seeing the facts as they really are and not as I want them to be. Now, it's real easy for theists to fall into that trap. But I'm telling you, the atheists and the materialists, they wallow in it. They think they can actually reconstruct a past to fit a theory that will accomplish future progress. But of course, you and I know different. You and I know that it's God who will have His way. And it's the Bible that's the truth. It's just a matter of patiently searching the facts, considering them according to context, and seeing where they lead. You don't have to worry about facts. They'll always glorify God. They'll always exalt the Word. Let God be true and every man a liar. If you're here and you're not a Christian, accept the truth of Christ. Accept the truth of what Christ has done for you, how He has died for your sins, how He's been resurrected and is now at the right hand of the Father, ruling over kings and angels. Will you let Him rule over you? Would you come and accept His grace for your soul? Let us baptize you into Christ tonight. Christian, you're in your struggles, in your worries, in your burdens, let us help. Come forward while we stand and sing.